Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Healthcare Business Women's Association Blog Talk Radio Show. My name is Julie Kelly, and I'm not only the VP of Business Development for Ashfield Healthcare, but also an HBA, as we like to call it, volunteer leader, and your host for our program today. Now, for those of you who don't know the HBA, it's a global nonprofit organization comprised of individuals and organizations from across the healthcare industry committed to achieving gender parity in leadership positions, facilitating career and business connections, and providing effective practices that enable organizations to realize the full potential of their female talent. Now, I've been hosting this program series called Career Transitions, Moving from A to Z with Success and Purpose. And this supports our mission by exploring real career journeys and sharing key learnings from our HBA members. And after 13 years with the HBA, there are certainly a lot of members and a lot of friends that I've made. And today, I'd like to introduce Diane Bryson, who's a patient advocate and engagement specialist in Inspired Health Strategies. And the title of her story is From Corporate to Contract, The Entrepreneurial Experience. So welcome, Diane.
Hi, Julie. Good to be here.
I'm glad to have you. And Diane, we've known each other for years, and we're both volunteer leaders of the HBA. And what I want to say is Diane is really an inspiring leader, a positive person, and a pioneer in the area of patient engagement. I remember about 10 years ago, Diane and I were at an HBA event, and they were talking in early days about patient engagement, and Diane stood next to me shaking her head. She says, "That's my world. That's my world. That's the world that I live in." And I had no idea what that world was, but it's 10 years later, I am in that world. So I was so excited to be able to have Diane on today just to tell her a little bit about her story and how she went from corporate environment to having her own company and contracting with our healthcare clients. So, Diane, let's start back. It's not too far alone. Like, when you were thinking about being grown up and going to school, what did you want to study? You know, what were your passions back then?
Well, I'll tell you, it's funny. I can remember being about 5 or 6 years old, and that at that time, the world for women was quite different than it is now. The opportunities were different. And I was trying to figure out at 5 or 6 years old how in the world I was going to work while having a family and trying to still hit those traditional milestones. And I actually, as a kid, decided I was going to be an artist because I could be an artist and still be home with my family and still make some money somehow. So I ended up going to college, actually, for fine arts, getting a BFA.
Oh, wonderful.
But, yes. So my media were, I'm sorry?
Go ahead. No, it's just
so my media were, photography. I grew up with a father who had a dark room, so I had a camera in my hand since I was probably 4 or 5 years old, and painting and drawing. And I was actually pretty good, but I was not Picasso, and I did not have family money. So halfway through college, I realized I was going to have to add to my major so that I could come out of school and be marketable and somebody would hire me. So I ended up going into an area that was pretty creative, and that was actually retailing. And I started out as an assistant buyer at Wanamaker's, John Wanamaker, which is gone now, but still has a pretty strong reputation based on the old French department stores. That was a world that could understand the creative side of me as well as enhance the business side of me.
Oh, excellent. So that makes sense. So I remember Wanamaker's. Was a big fan of that store, and retail certainly allows you.
You had to go to the store, at least when I was a kid. That was the store that you went to with your white gloves and little hat and everything. Quite different than we think of buying anything these days, right?
Oh, my gosh. It's so different, isn't it? You have to go get your stuff. I used to take my grandmother there, and she used to go in and go back to the changing room and just sit in there, wait for someone to come in and say, "Hello, what can I get for you?" Right?
Right. Oh, my goodness. Right. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
so what happened after retail? Yeah, take me through that.
So I ended up getting recruited out of retailing by one of the vendors that I bought from, rather. and mm-hmm. learned about sales, and I was shy as all get out. I'm still shy. But I had to learn with that job. No, nobody that knows me thinks I am. But I learned with that job, since it was straight commission, I had to talk. And I wasn't going to make any money if I didn't talk. So I learned how to present. I learned by the seat of my pants, really. But I had states as a territory. So I was on the road all the time. And I had a boyfriend who was making twice as much money as I was and home most of the time and had zip codes as a territory. And I said, well, something's wrong with this picture. I am just as smart as he is. I need to go where he is. And he was a pharmaceutical rep. And he's the one who really got me into the pharmaceutical industry. And so I got started just like most of us as a rep with Ciba Geigy, which no longer exists, which is now Novartis. I was there about 10 years and moved up the ranks. And I thought I was going to be in this industry. Honestly, Julie, I figured I would be in this industry 3 years and then I would go out on my own. I had absolutely no intention of staying in this industry. And here I am now, 30 years later, in love
same
with the industry.
Idea. Yeah, I remember saying the same thing. I'll go to Bristol Myers for a few years, get some experience. Yeah, I was there 15 years, and I'm still in the industry. But great. But I see how I understand those transitions going from retail sales to pharmaceutical sales, and then that kind of launched this whole career in the industry. So tell me a little bit about some of the opportunities you had and how you got to those opportunities. How did they happen?
Okay. Well, I feel really fortunate to have started out at Ciba, because now looking back, I didn't realize then what an incredible culture it was. We still have reunions of people who were at Ciba. I mean, I used to sit next to Doug Watson, who was the CEO then, and split a glass of scotch. I mean, that's how not hierarchical it was, okay? It was an incredible culture.
You had your own glass of scotch, I know it.
Well, I do, but after a while, I just didn't want any more. So if Doug wanted to share with me, I was certainly willing to share, trust me. So, but it was a great training ground. They really focused on developing leadership competencies. And it really gave me, I didn't realize it then as much as I do now, what how much it really was a culture that developed me. I ended up leaving and going to Medco, where I thought, okay, I've had 10 years in big pharma, I'm done. I still have this entrepreneur spirit in me. I want to go somewhere that is a little bit different. And so I went to Medco, and then Medco was the time of the wild, wild west. It was still owned by Merck. It had not yet morphed into Express Scripts, and it was full of the people that were there at its start, which meant you had assistants, secretaries who had $12 and $13 million because of the stock evaluation, the stock valuation because of when the company was bought by Merck. You would go out in the parking lot and see Ferraris and Testarossas and all this crazy cars. But it was a cool place to work that actually stretched me. But I had 10 years of solid stability at Ciba, and my first day at Medco, my boss said to me, we were hiring you to do the marketing for a disease management program that we had developed. But I'm telling you right now, we never did develop the program. You're going to have to develop the program and then market the program. Julie, I had no clue what that meant. I had no idea. I knew nothing about building a disease management program. So I said, okay, I've quit my job at Ciba. I don't want to go back. I want to figure this out, and I'm going to get this done. So what we did essentially then was, since we harnessed all the capabilities that Medco had in terms of having the pharmacies, having call centers, having the ability, of course, to ship drug and monitor and stay in touch with patients, we built one of the first hubs in the industry, and we just didn't call it a hub. And so I learned about algorithms. I learned about patients' needs, because I had not even done anything with patients up to that point. And I learned about health literacy. I learned about utilizing kits and communication tools and how to put into these algorithms the levers to have us understand how and when to interact with a patient. And all of that is what everybody uses today, but we built it from scratch. In the end, I did have a program, but by the end of building that program, I said, these people are crazy. And the programs actually, they were. I mean, how do you hire someone who doesn't know what they're doing? I'm gratified you thought I could do it, but my goodness. So, but at that time, as Medco's trying to sell these programs, of course, just like now, every company's looking for an immediate ROI. And my program was a high cholesterol patient support program. And that wasn't going to show an ROI immediately. We had a diabetes program and a CHF program. Both of those, it was easier to track the results. The high cholesterol patient support program was going to take some time. So eventually what Medco was doing was trying to figure out, okay, are we going to continue to try to sell these programs? What are we going to do? In the meantime, I had started an MBA program. I had actually gone through the MBA program at St. Joe's. And I got to know some people at Merck, so they were recruiting me into the into the international division at Merck, and I said goodbye to Medco. I've always wanted to live overseas, so I joined Merck proper with the thinking that eventually I would go overseas and work inside of a country, only to learn that usually that doesn't happen because the talent's too expensive. Usually the countries come to the U.S. to work to get the experience. But I had a wonderful opportunity. When I was at SIBA, I had launched Voltaren, which was a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory agent for pain and arthritis. And so I got to know that market, and I knew that Merck was in the process of developing a new class of drug called COX-2s, eventually called COX-2s. And I was very fortunate to be tapped as the person to launch that class globally. So I launched, again, no launch experience, incredible opportunity, and I was thrilled to have it. So I ended up launching Vioxx, my baby, which I know was taken off the market, but still my baby. I had the opportunity to launch that globally, and that meant that I led all of the original messaging, all the original branding, all of the original promotional materials, and also working hand-in-hand with every country, including the U.S., but every country, of course, takes on their own launch. But I was responsible for making sure that everything was ready for each of those countries as they went to launch. And I remember I had a boss who said to me, every time someone does a launch, you need to be prepared that not every country will launch on time. So, and here me being a very, perfectionist, I said, that's not going to happen to me. Every country did launch on time, and every country did launch successfully. And, of course, now everybody can look back and say that, you know, Vioxx was one of the most successful launches in history, and in spite of it being pulled off the market. But that's a whole different conversation for a different
conversation.
Podcast.
Yep. Different podcast.
So,
wow.
I didn't want to, and so after launching Vioxx, I didn't want to, again, I didn't want to go back to the traditional way. I didn't want to go back to West. I didn't want to. In order to grow it at Merck, I was going to have to go to West Point. West Point was back in Philadelphia, which is where I'm from, but I wasn't ready to go back to Philadelphia yet. And so I spent some time out in the field as a specialty manager, and I said, you know, let me try the supplier side. So again, another evolution. I decided to go out and work for a medical communications company. And I ended up working for a company called PPSI, which was, its only customer was Pfizer, which is why it's not in business today, probably. But I was on the COX-2 team for Pfizer, which meant that I knew, with my experience from Vioxx, I knew as much about their brand as I knew about my own. So I was really able to grow the business for PPSI at Pfizer and make some great relationships, but it also helped me see the supplier side of the industry, which I had not seen before. I didn't realize how much the supply folks jump when client wants something. And over time, it has really made me, especially
oh,
as
yeah.
I contract with businesses, it makes me a much better client now since I know the supply side.
Wow.
So eventually I worked with a few different medical education companies and realized that some didn't have the integrity, I guess, that I had looked for, and I'm using my network to get them business. I said, well, shoot, I can do this on my own and build a business. So with the help of a client who just really encouraged me, said, look, if you go out, we don't want to work with the company you're working with. We want to work with you. If you go out, we promise you some business. So I said, okay, this is my opportunity. And so I took the leap and really became a contractor that supported small device companies and companies that were just getting to the commercial stage. And I ended up with a contract with Sanofi that I figured was just something to help me along. It was going to be a 3-month stint, and I could still keep all my clients. And by the time this was over, my contracts were usually based on performance. So by the time this was over, the performance would be in, and I'd be getting paid by those clients. I did not see Sanofi as a long-term option at all. But I got there only to realize that the project that I was taking over was one that my immediate client, really didn't want to handle. He was launching a brand, and so this thing was sitting on his desk, and they decided to bring a contractor in to handle it. For the first few weeks, I couldn't even get this guy to sit down and talk to me at the end of the day because he was so disinterested. But I got there at a really opportune time. First of all, I get there and realize that they really want to spend some money on what they called at that time a multicultural marketing initiative. And usually those initiatives, and me being a black person in pharma, I've usually been tagged to do some of those kinds of initiatives, and they're not really well funded. They're not really well supported throughout an organization. If at the most you get $100,000, you're very lucky. This one was funded with $3.4 million, and it was going across the enterprise. And I said, oh, my God, we really have an opportunity to do something really different here. And I was able to work with market research to recraft the market research focus. So instead, we were still going to do focus groups with physicians and with patients separately. But the groups with patients I recrafted and said we need to include everybody who's in the patient's ecosystem. And that means not just a physician or a pharmacist or a nurse, but people from the community, faith-based people, people in policy, people who run community-based organizations that interface with patients. And I can't tell you how, with that first focus group, I was behind the glass with my fingers crossed, praying that this was going to go the way that I thought it would. And it did. We learned so much about the lives of patients, the insights that we got. Sanofi is still using today. I'm still using today. And those are the insights that completely changed my trajectory. With those insights, we ended up building the Community Health Partnership, which was an enterprise-wide, so it covered 5 products, and program that was multi-channeled, that at that time digital wasn't a big component. Today I would use it to scale the program. It was launched in 6 cities. We ended up touching about 60,000 patients. We ended up with results that showed that everything that we did in helping to make patients be this empowered patient that we always talk about by utilizing their community, by utilizing the influencers in their community to help encourage people to get through whatever barriers they have, to encourage people to manage their health better, not just coming from a doctor, but coming from all these trusted individuals in their lives. We were able to show that they were able to change their behaviors, and we have documentation of this, able to change their behaviors to a much more in a much more positive way in managing their health, as well as increased sales. With this program, now I know as a salesperson, if I give credit to anybody, trust me, it's hard won if you're getting more credit than me in terms of me building my business in my local territory. But we found with the Community Health Partnership, the sales teams gave that credit to our program. They saw that they got greater access and they saw that they had better relationships with physicians because they were bringing materials and information into their doctor's offices, as well as the managed care accounts and government accounts that were that was really going to be valuable to their patients, and that was the most important thing. So
wow.
That was really what changed me completely.
Pivotal.
Pivotal.
I'm hearing about this. Yeah, I mean, you've had so many great opportunities where you had to build something from nothing, and then you get this gig, your first consulting gig is something that put you on the map. So
yep.
what a great story, and you've since done consulting work like that for other
yes.
clients, correct? And across the patient space since then. So that brings us
yes.
up to today, correct?
Yes. Yes,
yes,
but it's not been so easy because as you had so kindly introduced me 10 years ago, this whole conversation wouldn't even be occurring.
Right.
Because people saw
right.
the patient as an altruistic opportunity and not a business one. And now, finally, the industry is waking up to the value of building relationships with people, with patients, and how
uh-huh.
that will enhance their business. Up to this
great.
Point, they really didn't get it, unlike every other
they
industry
didn't.
Out there.
Right,
nope.
right. So, Diane, let me pause here and say, you know, I'm hearing what an absolutely fabulous career with tremendous opportunities, and, you know, you've been so fortunate to find a true passion and go out on your own. What would
yeah.
you say is a common thread? What would you say is a common thread in your career story?
You know, I saw your questions, and I had to think about that and probably didn't have to think too long. It probably is taking risk, that not staying the same is an opportunity. If I stayed in the same place before I made each of those leaps, I'd still be back, you know, back in school. I'd probably be sitting on in a restaurant as a waitress trying to still be the artist. If I didn't see an opportunity to grow a bit, to be a little bit different. And I think take risk. You get nothing without taking
risk. If you won't move forward without a risk. And so what would that advice to your junior self? Because, you know, it sounds like you've, you know, you've been living the dream. So is there any advice you would have given your junior self, you know, if you're looking back now?
Yes, I would. I would say... fear is going to be there. Just manage it, and just manage. Mm-hmm. Feel it. Just feel it, and get through it. That even though I think that I took risks, I probably could have taken them sooner. That I didn't need to hang on because of everybody else's expectations. That my gut was right. My gut was right. Even when I went to Merck and I went to the international side. Everyone in my life told me that was a mistake, that you'll never get anywhere with international experience. And now, what are we looking for from everybody? But people who have experience at ex-U.S. Markets.
Right.
Right.
The world is flat, right? The world is flat
right.
and everything is global, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I would say definitely take risks and follow your gut. Do and again, manage the fear. The fear is going to be there. Manage it.
Right. Right. So here's my last question. How's the HBA played a role in your career?
Connecting me with people like you.
Absolutely.
I remember when the HBA was, I almost remember when it was formed because there was a woman, I can't remember her last name. I think it was Kessenblatt. I can't remember. She was one of the founders of HBA. And so HBA
uh-huh.
met on campus at SEBA early on.
Mm-hmm.
So, I thought as a rep, I said, oh, that's too big of an organization for me. I don't belong there. And I remember being on campus one day, and I was in meetings, and the women there encouraged me to go to the HBA meeting with them. And I said, oh, this is really what it's like. Okay, I am able to swim here. And I was open to the door opened to a lot of different opportunities. While I was at Merck, I was on a team that started Merck's first mentoring program, and I brought that mm-hmm. skill set to HBA and helped it start its mentoring programs, which go on through this day.
Absolutely.
So I feel really good about that. We changed it from people sitting at a table and meeting one time to something that was really ongoing. HBA gave me a chance to stretch in ways that I had learned at work and using competencies I learned in my daily life.
Right.
And
it
helped build me a network.
The network. Well, we're so glad you went swimming. You called it come swimming. Swim in this. Thank you for coming swimming. Yeah, you've come such a successful fish in our ocean, Diane. You've volunteered and given back, and we really appreciate you sharing your story today because, you made it happen and you took risks. So I'm going to close out our program today, and thank you again for joining. And for listeners, look forward to our next career journey story where we explore an international experience with Vincent Yap of Bayer. So this is the HBA signing off. Thanks, Diane.
Thank you.